Located on the crystal blue waters of Lake Huron lies Mackinac Island. She is tucked in between Michigan's upper and lower peninsulas. Indulge me as I share all the ins and outs of the place that stole my heart. This is Totally Mackinac Island. Hello and welcome to Totally Mackinac Island podcast. I am your host, Heather. Hope everyone had a great Easter. I can't believe that Easter's over. It was kind of funny. I was in the grocery store and walking around there and I realized all the Easter candy was on clearance, which didn't seem right that was over, but it is. And then I realized, booking one of my clients out, that in a few weeks we're in May. How is that possible? So anyway, very excited for today's show. So excited for you guys to listen and learn all about it. I could share a little bit going into it, but actually I just want to let the interview take you away with it. So I'm going to cut off from here and let you learn all you can from Dominic from the Mackinac Island Parks Department. Enjoy.
All right, everyone. Today we are very lucky to be joined with Dominic, and we'll go into who Dominic is in just a moment. But before we begin, the question I always ask everyone that comes on, can you share with the listener what your Mackinac Island origin story is?
Oh, I'd be delighted to. So a little background, it'll connect back to Mackinac Island, I promise. But so my wife and I went to Central Michigan University, and we both took jobs in Mount Pleasant when we were done. And then we both had kind of begun looking for other opportunities. She was interviewing to be, she was a wedding coordinator in Mount Pleasant, and she was looking for applying or interviewing for a position in Cadillac. And in the middle of that interview, somehow, some way, it came up that the management company she was talking with managed a couple of properties on Mackinac Island. And then she was like, oh, we do. And we had just come back from there like 3 weeks previous. And she's like, oh, we just were on the island. We loved it there. And they're like, we wouldn't have any interest. Kind of like a ha-ha aside. And she's like, actually, you know, I don't think I would be opposed. So we talked about it some. And it was for just like the end of the 2012 season. For her to come up to Stone Cliff, the inn at Stone Cliff, up on the northern, kind of in the interior of the island. And so she came up and she's like, oh, we'll do it as a little trial run, see if you like it. And 14 years later, here we are. So she moved to the island. She loved that job. So I, you know, started thinking, hey, if I want to stay married, I probably should figure out some way to get up to Mackinac Island. And so I took a job with the Murray Hotel on Mackinac Island. It was a lovely experience, but I found out I'm not, I was working food service management, and I found out that that realm of hospitality wasn't what I wanted to do anymore. So a position opened up here with the state park, the group travel and special events coordinator. I applied for it, was lucky enough to be offered the position. That was in 2014. And So then I did that for a few years, and I became the marketing manager, and now I'm the chief of marketing here with the Mackinac State Historic Park. So it's, you know, I pinch myself often. That view that I'm looking at on the Zoom screen with you is pretty much the view from my office every day. And I pinch myself often that I get to live and work in such a beautiful place.
Wow.
I'm raising my kids there too. We have kids, and they're over there with us. It's so cool.
Yeah. Now, are you on the island currently right now, or are you over in Mackinac City?
I am back in Mackinac City. I was actually on the island this morning for several hours, looking at a couple of projects that we have going on over there. But so our organization is, obviously we have an office on Mackinac Island, but we also have an administrative office in Mackinac City with three wonderful historic sites and two state parks in Mackinac City that we manage as well. So I split my time between the two, and actually throughout the summer as well, I'm over here in Mackinac City quite often as well.
Yeah, that's amazing. It really is. For the listener, I put on behind my Zoom, I put different scenes from Mackinac when I just started doing this to have people do that. So what he's talking about, I was at the fort, and it's the very front of the fort, which you can never get enough of that view. It's Marquette Park below you. It's just gorgeous. It's just gorgeous. It's one of the best views on the island. I mean, there's so many great views, but that's
I disagree with you if I could, but I'm a little biased, but I think it's the most beautiful view that's available on Mackinac.
Yeah, because you just, the sun, and we were very lucky when I did take this picture, those days that we were there, the sun was so incredible, and so it was in October, and it was beautiful, so I felt very, very lucky that we had that weather. So the listener probably heard you say what you did. So now let's go into what it is that you do.
Right. So as the chief of marketing for Mackinac State Historic Parks, I have a number of things that are under my umbrella. For the size of the scope of what we manage, we actually have a fairly small staff. There are about 40 of us year round. It balloons to about 150 in the summer with the seasonal staff that we bring in. So under my umbrella is, of course, all of our marketing efforts that we do to attract people to our various historic sites and parks. And that's, you know, traditional advertising, digital advertising, social media, all those things fall under my umbrella. And then museum stores, so all of our admission points and museum stores. We have a phenomenal sales manager, Suzette, that manages those things, and she's on my team. Our marketing and group travel coordinator, the position I started in so many years ago, that position reports to me. And then also IT, uh-huh, is kind of under my umbrella as well. But it works out well because you know, we have a really sophisticated point of sale system, actually, an inventory system, and then so that person works closely with a lot of our guest services staff and support staff. And then so what have I mentioned? IT, marketing, group travel. We work together in a lot of different departments as well. So I work with our park operations, which is what we call like our maintenance crew, our crew that maintains and supports all the buildings and parks that we have. So I work closely with them on a number of different things, and as well as with the other members of our administrative staff as well. So a lot of things, you know, under the marketing umbrella, as it were.
Yeah. Now, does the staff that's year-round, do they go back and forth the same as you do, too?
There are a handful of us that do. So, you know, I'll do that. Our director, Steve, he goes back and forth as well. He's over on the island in the summer. Our interpretation coordinator, Jack, he's in charge of Fort Mackinac. He'll go back and forth and spend his summer over there. But that might be the extent of us that live over there. There's a handful of people in this office that will commute as well over to the island pretty much daily in the summer, but they're in this office in the winter. But only the three of us that live there seasonally right now. And there's some staff that live over the year round, like our park manager on Mackinac Island's there year round. But only a few of us that move over there for the summer.
Yeah, which I know, as so many of us, we are extremely... I know that so many people want me to ask you so many questions about living on the island, but that would be a completely different episode because I am beyond excited to be talking about what we're going to be doing. But before we get into that I know a lot of places are currently hiring, and I wanted to ask if you are, can you share with the listener how someone could apply? Plus, I know sometimes there's lodging and meal plans, mm-hmm, included. So can you go into that a little bit for the listeners?
Oh, I'd be absolutely delighted to. So yeah, we are, like I mentioned, we have 100 to 110 seasonal positions that we fill every year between the island and Mackinac City. And we are actively looking for to fill those roles right now. And it's, you know, a lot of people, I think, associate it with kind of college age people that will come up and spend their summer. And we do get a lot of people there, and it's great. But it's open to anybody that really wants to come spend that summer up in the Straits area. And we're looking for all kinds of different roles as well. We have you know, the positions where you get dressed up in the historic costumes and you learn how to do the various tasks that we're interpreting that people did here historically. We have positions in guest services where either you're maybe working at an admission spot or you're working in one of our museum stores. And then park operations that we're hiring for, that could be working on you know, lawn crews, or, you know, working and doing those kind of things, or working in custodial capacity, or working in so many other ways just to keep the park itself operating, helping out at the airport. We manage the airport on Mackinac Island. So there's all these different roles, and we have them all listed out on our website. That it's really easy to apply. It's a quick form that you fill out on our website, and goes directly actually to me. I see every one of those that come in, and then they go, they get forwarded out to the staff that's the position that, you know, the department that you're applying into. I know that they come in. I know I'm always excited to see what people's stories are, what brings them excited about working in the Straits of Mackinac area. But yeah, we are always always looking for staff, and then we have great housing options on both sides. So over on the island, we have the Historic Mission House is our staff housing. It's actually the first resort hotel on Mackinac Island. So it's an 1820s, 1830s building that we painstakingly restored, and it's right on the Mission Point, right in between Mission Point's property, right over there. we don't have a meal plan, but we're one of the only housing units that has full-on equipped kitchens, and I think there are five of them throughout the house.
Wow.
And I'm going to brag a little bit. Our rent is the cheapest for our seasonal staff. It is less than $100 a month to live there throughout the summer. It's a really fun community because we have such a interesting mix of people on our staff, from the people in those, you know, historic interpreter roles to park operations to guest services, all ages. And we have this really strong alumni group, people who have lived over there. They get back together every year for usually a weekend on the summer and come relive those glory days of their Mackinac Island summer, whenever it was. So it's really, it's a fun sense of community and, from what I gather, a really fun place to live over there. That is, I'm happy. I mean, I got my family, so it'd be weird, but like, I'm sad I miss out on some of the fun things that we do over there sometimes.
Yes, I know. The one time I was staying at the Village Inn Suites, and I finally figured out that house across the street was where people stayed. I didn't know at the time it was for the Grand Hotel staff, but I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, that looks so much fun. You know, that they just had, and it did, it gave you the sense of, as I've heard several times, like a college dorm experience, like, but in a way, a different experience too, because so many people, as you mentioned, are saying there's so many different interests to be going in there.
Absolutely. And it's such a, you know, I love when I would see like our group, you know, from our housing or from any other housing, but it's like this mix of people. You have like the 21, 22 year olds that are there kind of for the party a little bit, which is fine. That's part of the experience of living on that island. But then they'll be like just hanging out with somebody in their 60s who's spending their summer on the island as well. And they're like best friends. It's and I don't think, you know, if they were in whatever their hometown is, that may not happen, you know. So that's just part of like that shared experience of spending their summer on Mackinac Island and having, you know, similar interests or maybe no interests that are the same, but you kind of just get to know these people who maybe you wouldn't otherwise. And they become lifelong friends, and it's so much fun to watch. And it's just, it's just so exciting that I'm part of the organization, like a lot of us on the island, that can bring these people together and kind of help create these relationships. That's one of the special things for me of spending, you know, like my summer in the role that I'm in on Mackinac Island.
For sure. And then for some of the people that do work for you guys, do you find that even if some of them, let's say, are in the fort, but they also have other skills to help out in other areas, do they do multiple jobs? Do some of them do that for you guys?
Some do, for sure. And if they really start, you know, somebody comes to us and, hey, I really have an interest in X. You know, I'm hired to be, you know, guest services and you know, and I'm enjoying what I'm doing, but I'm really interested in you know, in historic interpretation or whatever, that we can kind of start, you know, getting them in, you know, seeing what it's all about. Maybe they can volunteer for a day or even get paid for a day doing that. And then, so when they want to come back next year, okay, now I'm going to apply to be this position now. And so we certainly encourage them to get interested in the various roles that we offer. And I know we promote a lot from within. Right now, our current park manager started it, who was in charge of all of our operations on Mackinac Island, started as a guest services representative. That was his first seasonal summer job when he was in college. And now he's, you know, moved up into this role. So, you know, cause he showed an interest in it and he was excited to kind of look at, I think it was the airport was what he was interested in when he worked here, and then kind of transitioned into that role. So, no, we encourage it. We love it that people, get into what we do as an organization and all the different aspects of it, and that they show an interest in whatever that might be.
Yeah. Because I'm sure that some of them, when they do see the job posting, they're like, I don't really want to do that. Or if they're not having an experience with it, they haven't gone in there, but then once they maybe see it happening, might be like, oh, that could be. And I am so glad that you guys allow them to even have a way to introduce it to them too, because that's that. And I'm sure, do you get a lot of return employees?
You know, we do. It's a mix, and sometimes it'll go in waves a little bit as well, but especially on the museum program side, or like the historic interpreters, a lot of them come year to year. A lot of those people who are in those roles are typically going into something in the history field as well, which works out well. But like, we have Alice, who is here. She's helping us mark merchandise to get ready for the year. She has been at our museum stores for 27 years now and works seasonally for us, and comes over from Sheboygan every day. And so there is a mix, but But it will, like I said, it'll kind of come in waves. We'll have the same kind of, a lot of returning people year to year, and all of a sudden it'll be like, oh, there's a whole new staff at Fort Mackinac this year, which is exciting in a new way, because we can kind of like watch them get, learning these things and kind of getting excited about how everything operates and just the whole experience of living and working somewhere like Mackinac Island and kind of getting that fresh experience. And then it makes it, I think, exciting for all of us that that we have this new kind of, fresh set of eyes that kind of look at however we're doing everything and making sure that, hey, is this the best way to be doing these things as well? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of nice having that fresh perspective, year in, year out, especially. But when it's like that whole new class, it's like the class is graduated, so now it's the incoming freshman coming in, and that's kind of fun in a way as well.
Yeah, it's I remember when I used to take my niece and nephew, whenever we would leave, because each year they were different, I would ask them what they wanted to do if they worked on the island. And the one year my nephew said he would want to be in charge of picking up the trash. Which I was like, good for you. Yeah. And then him and my niece both the one year said that they would want to work at the fort. They just thought it was so cool to go in there and see that, the reenactments that they were seeing. And it wasn't even so much a fort. My niece wanted to be more down on the ones that were on Market Street.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So now, what are the hours and the season of the forts? And if you want to share the different forts right now to share with the listener that we're not just talking about on Mackinac Island too.
Yeah, absolutely. So what a lot of people may not realize is that Fort Mackinac, its origins are in Mackinac City, where I'm sitting right now. So I'm going to do a little history lesson here. I'll make it short.
Please, no, please go take as long as you need. I love it.
So there's been a European presence in the Straits area since the 1600s. The French missionaries were here. A fort was established in St. Ignace in the late 1600s. But in 1715, the French established a fort right behind me out here called Fort Michilimackinac. And the French are there until the 1760s. The British take control after the French and Indian War, the Seven Years' War. People may have learned what that the name of that war, but the British take control in this area. But they're only here for a short amount of time. In the 1770s, obviously, there's a little unrest out east here in what becomes the United States, and the British are fearful of an attack here at Michilimackinac. If you visit this fort, it's right on the water. It's a wooden palisade wall. It's vulnerable to attack. So they start searching out, where can we build another fort? So they head over to Mackinac Island. They head up on the bluff. They look down. There's a natural harbor. There's an area for a town or community to develop right below. So they move the fort over to Mackinac Island. And what they do is they literally take apart the buildings at Michilimackinac and either put them in a boat and send them across, or they drag it across the ice and start building Fort Mackinac up on the bluff. And then whatever's left, they burn. Because in case the Americans do come, that there's nothing there for them to use. There's nothing there to easily establish a fort right there. That never happens, of course. And the British are fully moved over here by 1780, 1781. Fast forward. So it's an American fort. Most of its life after that is decommissioned in the 1890s. We started as a state park in 1895. At that time, we also, a little bit later after that, we get control of the parkland over here in Mackinac City to become Michigan's second state park. Mackinac Island's number one, Michilimackinac is number two here in Mackinac City. And at that point, we know that there was a fort here. There's plenty of maps. There's a lot of evidence. It had been preserved. And when Mackinac City was platted, the people who platted this village were so thoughtful to save this area as a park up here. It would have been a very, easy place to develop. But it's always saved as a park. So in the 1950s, we start reconstructing Fort Michilimackinac. So today, Fort Michilimackinac is a fully open interpreted fort. It's all reconstructed. It's not like Fort Mackinac, which is original. So we have the two forts in the Straits here. Actually, there's a third we can get into in a minute. But the two main forts here in the Straits of Mackinac area, which is Fort Michilimackinac over here in Mackinac City, Fort Mackinac over on Mackinac Island. Fort Mackinac will open first this year. That's going to open up on May 3rd for this summer. And it'll be open at 9 a.m. to 5. We shift those hours into summer hours. We're open later. And then we'll be open into the end of October over at Fort Mackinac. So a full six-month season over there this year, which I'm really excited about. Here in Mackinac City, we open a week later. We're on May 8th, so 5 days later. We'll open up this fort over here. And then it'll be also open, adjusted hours in the summer, open up more. into the kind of middle end of October. October 20th is our last day here in Mackinac City this year. The forts are, yes, they're both forts. They both have a wall around them, and they both have soldiers in them. That's about where the similarities end in the two forts. Okay. This is a working British fort over here. It's the year 1781 when you walk into Colonial Michilimackinac, and that is the year that that fort ceases to exist over there. So we are talking about all the turmoil and things that are going on, and some of the garrisons over on Mackinac Island already, and some are here, and there's a lot of confusion and just distrust and things that are going on as they're getting ready to literally shut this community down and move everybody over to Mackinac Island. So that's it's an exciting thing for us to talk about and explore here in Mackinac City, and then over on Mackinac Island because it's an original fort and it's set up as it was when it was a national park. So we're in the 1880s over there, and we're kind of showcasing what life was like for the soldiers and civilians that were living in Fort Mackinac at that time, when it's becoming a very popular resort destination. Tourism is already the huge business over there in Mackinac Island in the 1880s. So it's an interesting time to be a soldier stationed in this place in the world in the 1880s. So we can kind of explore a lot of those stories over at Fort Mackinac. Of course, with the iconic cannon firing and rifle firings and things that we do. So that's kind of the short, very short history and story of those two sites and our two forts. But both open in May, pretty much the first part of May, and open into October.
Now, Fort Holmes.
Yeah. A third fort.
If the listener's not aware of that, can you share the hours and when that all opens and how that works?
Absolutely. So Fort Holmes is the second fort on Mackinac Island, Mackinac Island's other fort. If you're okay with it, I can do a little background.
About I would love it. You're not going to get anything out of me, but yes, on that.
So during the War of 1812, the Americans had control of Fort Mackinac for 15 years or so at that point. The very first land engagement of that war is the British retaking Fort Mackinac. They land in the middle of the night on the island. They drag a cannon up to the high ground behind the fort and pretty much knock on the door and say surrender or else. There's 400 or 500 people out there on the British cause. There's only 60 people inside Fort Mackinac. They do the math. It's just, we're going to lose regardless here. So when the British retake the fort, they know, hey, there's high ground behind the fort here. We know this. We had this fort for a while, and there's a very vulnerable spot here at Fort Mackinac, and that's at the rear. So they establish a second fort on the highest point on Mackinac Island, which at that time, right now, there's trees obscuring that view and everything. Back then, that wasn't the case. It was a clear line of sight. And so they establish what they call Fort George up on the highest point of Mackinac Island as the way to kind of protect the rear of the island and the fort. So there would be no way that nobody could sneak up on them like the British had done to the Americans, earlier that year. So they establish Fort George. It's ready to go. It's active. It's their soldier station there during the Battle of Mackinac Island in 1814 when the Americans tried to retake the fort. And when the Americans do get the fort back, when the Treaty of Ghent ends the War of 1812 and, the Americans receive that fort back that had been captured during the war, they maintain that fort. They station soldiers up there, but they rename it Fort Holmes in honor of Andrew Hunter Holmes, who was killed in the Battle of Mackinac Island in 1814. He was a ranking officer that was killed during that battle. So they rename it in his honor. However, they're only up there for like 2 or 3 years before they decommissioned that fort. So that the actual active lifetime of Fort Holmes was very, very short. And then I think it caught fire and burned eventually. It was reconstructed in the early 20th century, caught fire and burned, reconstructed again, caught fire and burned. This reconstruction was done in 2015, so it's actually relatively new reconstruction up there. Was done in 2015 to celebrate 200 years of peace between the United States and Canada, because Canada was British Canada. So 200 years from that 1815 Treaty of Ghent, we reconstructed that fort as part of that whole bicentennial of that war. And so now Fort Holmes sits proudly up on the hill once again. If you are able-bodied and able to make it up to Fort Holmes, the view from Fort Mackinac is, I think, is the best. I'm going to say that out there. Fort Holmes is like 1B. It's really, really beautiful from up there. and you get more of a high level. It's like the bird's eye view kind of the Straits of Mackinac up there. With you can see the bridge way off in the distance. The ferry boats look like toys coming in from the mainland. Especially if a freighter goes by or something, it's absolutely stunning. That fort is open. The blockhouse is open from 10 to 4 every day, early May through the end of October. And there's no admission to get into Fort Holmes. That is free. That's the reward. If you take that trip up the hill or up the stairs to get there, we'll let you come into the blockhouse for free.
Yeah.
So, but it's really a fascinating, chapter in Mackinac's history. And the view alone is just unreal. It's so good up there.
It is. And I love that you guys put picnic tables up around there, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Yeah, so once you get up there, take picnics and you can sit and eat and, enjoy the fact that you did that little bit of a trek up there, which it's extremely enjoyable. You just have to take some breaks,
Exactly. So one of my favorite things with Fort Holmes, too, and this is a weird one, but I like it there. So we built a vault toilet up there. It's just a pit toilet. Mm-hmm. But our park manager built it in a way where it looks like a little mini Fort Holmes. So next time you're up there, look at the bathroom. It's actually set up like a little blockhouse up there. So it matches the area up there. That's one of my favorite little details that they did up at Fort Holmes there. We had to add a restroom.
Really nice.
Make a porta, like an outhouse out here. It's going to be like an executive nice outhouse.
You know what, though? I love that you guys did put that up there because it is nice to be able to know that you're like, okay, thank goodness we have that, because if you want to go down and then go from there and Sugarloaf and all of that, which of course we'll get into in another time, but yes, it is. Fort Holmes is beautiful with that.
Absolutely.
So yeah, and I think for the listener to know that it is also free to go up there too. Mm-hmm. You're going to get a little bit of the history and then see all of that. Okay. Now, one thing that people sometimes would like to know, that there is an opportunity for people to fire the cannon. Can you share with the listener what they have to do, how old they need to be, go into details about it for us?
Absolutely. So that's one of the coolest things that I think we offer, is that a chance to, anybody who's been to Mackinac Island, the cannon boom is one of those iconic things that you're on Mackinac Island because it just rattles around downtown. You can hear it. And we set it up where one guest a day can fire off that opening Fort Mackinac cannon shot. So it's pretty much just wakes up Mackinac Island. Like, we're open for business for the day. So it's only one per day, and you have to do it. We go old school with this one because it is just the one per day. You have to call us and reserve it. So there's all details on our website. If you're on the Fort Mackinac page, you'll see the information for it. It's $75 to fire the opening cannon for the day. But you are the only non-staff member inside Fort Mackinac when you do this. So you get early access to the fort. You meet with one of our interpretive staff. You got to be 13 years old to do it. That's a rule. That's a black powder rule that we have as an organization.
Yep.
Because you are firing, you're lighting black powder on fire and making a loud boom. So you got to be 13. But yeah, you are the first person into the fort for the day. You get a little private session with one of our interpretive staff where they'll talk about history. They'll leave time to answer questions. You get that amazing view as the island is kind of waking up for the day. And then you hear reveille play. So the music will play inside the fort. And then when that's done, you get the command, the ready fire command, and then you shoot that first cannon to open up Fort Mackinac for the day, to wake up Mackinac Island, and you get that sense of power that you just fired off a 1841 smoothbore cannon. Not a lot of people can say they've done that.
No.
And then you get that that sense of just everybody in Mackinac Island right there downtown just heard something that you did. I did it. I fired the cannon. And it's a powerful feeling. As from experience, I've been able to fire the cannon a couple of times in my life.
Uh-huh.
It is very, very cool. And it's a one person per day experience that we have up there. So it's kind of a special program that we do, that allowing somebody to come in and do that. So it's one of the things that we do.
I love that you offer that. Now, if somebody were to sign up, to do that and pay for it, and let's say their family is with them, are they all included, or do they have to pay an extra park fee, which is understandable?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you can bring family and friends with you for sure. We do charge admission. Anybody coming into the fort has to have a valid ticket for the day. Mm-hmm. But they can, what that ticket can do, though, allow you to come in early with your the person who is firing the cannon. So got to get those, the pictures and videos, of course. You got to make the memory of that we're doing this. So we do. You can purchase tickets, and we can set that all up right when you purchase the experience. That, you know, we have any, you know, adults and children with you as well, and they're part of the experience as well. They may not get the load and fire the cannon, but they can ask questions. They can be a part of the whole experience as well.
So listen, I'm going to totally sign up when we come.
Absolutely.
I am doing this. I think that would be so fun for all of us to go up there and do that. And I cannot think of anything better than to do that. And just feel like I'm waking the island up.
Absolutely. Yes. Like everybody that's there, that's already on the island that morning, that people got on those first boats, people are waking up in the hotels, downtown, whatever. Like, they heard you do that. That is that was you that did that.
So. Yeah. I always take sound recordings to put for my background noise when I do my podcast. And I was so lucky that one day I not only got the fairies, I got a cannon firing. I got so many great sounds on there, and that's what I tend to loop. And I always try to do a different one when I go there, but that one's one of my favorite because I have so many different things, and it's just the nice noise of Mackinac Island there with that. And that is what is so great with it. So yes, I will be doing that when I come up there.
Fully expecting. I'll be waiting for that phone call from you.
I will be doing it. Don't you worry. Neil's going to come home and be like, by the way, I'm going to fire the cannon back, you know, which I think the kids will love and all of it. It'll be fun.
For sure.
Now that we've kind of gotten just some basics, skin the top of everything, we have a lot of ground to cover. And you started, we discussed this beforehand, and we're going to start from Fort Michilimackinac to Fort Mackinac. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a great ground for us to start to go into, because I think the one thing that so many of us are always amazed is that there is even actually a fort on the island. Mm-hmm. And then when you talking about Fort Michilimackinac, all of it going together at that time. So if you would like to go in and start sharing away the history of it all, I'm going to let you take it away.
Yeah. So, you know, I kind of did the broad overview of it, but with, you know, Fort Michilimackinac is, you know, that's the linchpin to Mackinac Island becoming Mackinac Island. You know, the fur trade is the dominant industry here in the late 17th, you know, through the 18th century into the 19th century. That's where the money is. It's buying and selling and trapping and doing everything involved with furs, because that's high fashion in Europe and they're bountiful up here. So obviously, once the French are established here, we got to protect this. We have to, you know, have something set up where we can, you know, bring these furs in and protect this lucrative business that's coming through here. So they construct Fort Michilimackinac here on the very northern tip of the Lower Peninsula. It is right, pretty much where, you know, almost where Lakes Michigan and Huron meet, where the bridge divides. At the fort is right there. And that's because, you know, the Great Lakes, that's the freeway, that's the highway, and historically that's how you get around. That's the quickest way from A to B is to hop on the water. So you have, you know, these fur traders and these, you know, these groups of people coming through to trade with the native peoples that are here too. They're the experts in it. So like, this is such a strategic area for the French to be. And you know, so Fort Michilimackinac gets, you know, begins to get constructed in 1715. It continues to grow throughout its life pretty much. But it becomes the hub of this very lucrative business here, the fur trade. That's, you know, one of the British were very excited to acquire Fort Michilimackinac after the French and Indian War, the Seven Years' War, because it's a major hub. It's the, and this is, you know, a really strategically important outpost for the British to have in the 1700s, which is why they move it during the Revolution, because that's how important this area is to the British. And so when the British move in, actually the most dramatic event in that fort's history happens right after the British move in 1761, where the French had fully understood the relationship that they kept with the native peoples that were here, and they understood some of the tradition, and obviously weren't great to the native people in the grand scheme, but they understood the relationship better. The British take over, they don't understand that relationship, and they treat, you know, the native peoples poorly. And I'm, you know, a lot of listeners may remember learning about Pontiac's uprising in the early 1760s, which was a coordinated attempt to take over, or at least, you know, severely damage the British empire here and you know, in a lot of these Midwestern forts. And as part of that, there is a dramatic attack at Fort Michilimackinac in 1763. The native peoples here, they set up a game of Bagataway lacrosse, is what we would know it today.
Right,
it takes place right outside the fort over here. They invite everybody in the fort to come out and watch, and they stage this game. And then at a coordinated time, a signal was made, and the attack begun. They throw the ball. I think it was they throw the ball over the palisade wall into the fort, and that was the signal that this is happening. It's on, and the native peoples here actually take over Fort Michilimackinac. It was a coordinated attack. And drove the British out of here. It was about a year, I think, before the British came back and got the fort back after that. And a very dramatic, very important event in the fort's history here, where the British Empire was defeated, at least here, and made a move out for a short while, at least. And then that did improve relations to the point where during the Revolution, a lot of the native groups and they've sided with the British during the Revolution. But so it helped improve that. But that's a very dramatic event that happened here in 1763. Into the 1770s, as things are becoming more and more volatile in the U.S. and the country, it becomes very apparent that this fort has some shortcomings, and one is its defense. I recommend anybody coming into Fort Michilimackinac today. It's built on the footprint where it was historically. We know through archaeological research that it was here, and just how close to the water it is. When you're standing at that front gate, you are 10, 15 feet from the water, and it's wow. It is a wooden palisade wall, so it is very vulnerable, very very open to attack. So that's when guys start searching for where can we move, where can we go that's far more defensible. And you get up on the bluff on Mackinac Island, and the next time somebody's at Fort Mackinac on Mackinac Island, take that look down now where you're at. There's no way a cannon's going to reach those walls up there. You can see anything, at least from the from the south, anything that's coming. And then you can see why. It's like this is the place to move this fort. They didn't fortify the rear of the fort, which became apparent during the War of 1812. But you can see the reasons why that fort was moved over there. So with Fort Michilimackinac today, though, with that fort being completely reconstructed, allows us to do so many more things in there than we can do at Fort Mackinac. So we can interpret so many different aspects of the site's history from, there was soldiers there, but there were a ton of civilians there as well, because there was a community within the palisaded wall there. So we have, the women who were working there historically and the various tasks they were given. And we can interpret that. We have food waste programs and laundry and just different things that was happening in there. We have the civilian population in general, the fur traders and the merchants that were there. And we can talk about the things that they were doing historically. And then the soldiers there, where if we fire a cannon, we fire a musket in there, we fire a mortar, which is really cool. So we can interpret all of these different people, and we have a native interpreter out there as well, so we can talk about the native people that were there as well. So we can all these different groups of people that were put together here in the 1770s. And on top of all that, we have the longest ongoing active archaeological excavation in North America happening inside Colonial Michilimackinac as well. So we're digging up the past daily and every single day. So there is just so many cool things to see at Michilimackinac, and it ties just directly into Fort Mackinac, because that's the next step of that site. That's where they tear that one down and they move it to Mackinac Island. So they just work hand in hand. And then, like I said earlier, like they're both forts, they both have walls, they both have soldiers, and that's like the extent of where the similarities end in there. Whereas Fort Mackinac, there are 14 buildings there today there, and they're all original, which is awesome. You're stepping right into 1865 or whatever year it might, that building was constructed. And you can get a feel for what those people were going through at that time, because you can see stuff that's from the 1860s or whatever year it is in there. And we can see people dressed in that outfit, and we can hear, or see and touch things that were historic and they're relevant. And then at Fort Mackinac, you're looking out at this incredible view, and you can kind of also get that sense if you visit, especially in the shoulder seasons, that this was a really isolated post as well. And you're in the middle of nowhere, up here a little bit, especially in the 18, you know, I think of myself like in the 1830s being stationed at that fort. You know, that's
oh my gosh.
When I was over there this morning on Mackinac Island and it was snowy and cold, at least I knew I had a boat that I could get on. I'd be back on the mainland in 40 minutes. Like, that's not the case, you know, necessarily back then, because, you know, you're not going to just hop on your steel-hulled boat and go back to the mainland. You know, so it's kind of, you can get that sense there a little bit. And then in the 1880s, the period of time that we're interpreting with our soldiers and staff and everything in there, you also get this different experience of, this is a very popular location even then. You know, today it's obviously, you know, the jewel of Michigan, and it's such a stunning place to go. And you can get that feeling in the 1880s, this was also a very popular location for people to come visit. Grand Hotel is built in 1887. You already have the Mission House Hotel had come and gone, I think, by that point. Island House had been built by that point. So it's becoming a fashionable resort destination already in the 1880s. And it's the headquarters of a national park, you know, so there's that element of it as well. So, you know, you can kind of like explore the stories of the people that were in the Army post-Civil War, just an interesting, you know, group of people that are serving in the Army. It's an Army that's made up of a lot of immigrants in the Army of the 1880s. So a lot of unique stories of the people that were there who served here. So, yeah, just two entirely different experiences at the two forts that kind of, you know, spread this nearly 200-year span of history that we can kind of talk about just in those two sites alone.
Right. Now, so I wrote down a few questions.
Yeah. And I can talk. Okay. You can see. I can just keep
going. No, listen, I love it. So I was just seeing that. So first was, when you said it was, what, when you say things were moved over there, like, was all those buildings that are original over there, were those all moved? Like, what exactly was moved?
Yeah, so there's actually, unfortunately, there's nothing left from Michilimackinac and all that moved over to Mackinac Island.
Okay.
So they reconstructed a lot of these buildings there through fire or reconstructing buildings when it was an active fort. So none of those original constructions still last, unfortunately. Yeah. But that's how they were able to move over and be moved in fairly quickly over there, was by tearing down buildings and moving them over here. And then also moving some, they're long gone as well, but they moved some into the village downtown as well. So on, you know, on Market Street, which would have been kind of the main street back then, some of these houses were reconstructed over there as well. And unfortunately, none of them exist anymore. We thought maybe for a minute that McGulpin House downtown was an original building moved over from Michilimackinac. We actually did some really sophisticated testing on the wood in there and discovered that it is probably the oldest residential building still in existence on Mackinac Island, but that it was built on Mackinac Island. So it's nothing exists from Michilimackinac over to here anymore.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, because I was so curious, because those buildings of it, a lot of them are made from stone.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's the first thing. So the first new build for the British when they moved over to Mackinac Island was the officer stone quarters and the stone wall that surrounds Mackinac.
Yeah.
So that's limestone that was on the island. They used that limestone that was there to construct those things. The stone quarters, yeah, was the very first building they constructed. They actually never finished it. The Americans finished that when they moved in. But that was the first building the British constructed when they moved over. New construction on at Fort Mackinac.
So when Fort Mackinac was over there, was there still a huge presence of Native Americans then too?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So, you know, there was missionaries coming over here, like Father Marquette had been over on Mackinac Island. So there was still a large Native presence here as the Europeans and the British started moving over. You know, I'm sure, I haven't done a ton of research on that, but I'm sure probably not the, you know, I'm guessing not probably not the best relationship at all times, is my hunch. But yeah, there were still a lot of Native people there, and still are today. Yeah.
Yeah. Now with the fort entries and stuff like that, each one is a different fee. So if you go to Fort Michilimackinac, that does not include Fort Mackinac, correct?
It does not. Nope, there are separate admission fees for both sites. Yep.
Okay.
Michilimackinac includes everything inside. Michilimackinac is $15.25 for an adult admission there. And that one includes everything that's within there, including the archaeology dig that's in there and being able to see kind of those different elements. At Fort Mackinac, it's $16.25, but that includes all of the buildings downtown and the art museum and blacksmith shop and all those things over there as well. But, and then we have a combo ticket where it knocks off like a buck or two overall. Instead of buying them separately, it knocks a couple bucks off as a combo ticket.
Yeah, so I feel that a lot of people don't know this with the Fort Mackinac, the other parts of the fort ticket that they don't know about. And I'd like you to share with them so that way they don't miss that opportunity to visit those.
Oh, for sure. I think to me, one of the coolest things of that Fort Mackinac ticket is not only do I get everything involved with the fort when I go in there, but there are, if I come in the middle of summer, there are five other buildings that ticket includes as well. You know, the premier one to me is the Richard and Jane Manoogian Mackinac Art Museum, just a mouthful to say, but the Mackinac Art Museum, which is located right in front of the fort in Marquette Park down there. It is just, it's our home. We had this huge collection of beautiful old photos and paintings and you know, pieces of art that we wanted to put on display. So we created that museum down there about 15 years ago now. And it's just got these gorgeous old photos and paintings of the island. It's just, it's so peaceful and beautiful in there. And then we have a juried exhibition. So not only do we have these beautiful older pieces from Mackinac Island, but we have new art that we put on display every single summer in there, and it's to a theme. And so it's the kind of the modern interpretation of Mackinac Island as well in there. So that's included with your Fort Mackinac ticket. Then you go to Market Street, and if you're there in the summer, you get the American Fur Company store, which is on the corner right there. Then the Gulpin House, which dates to 1790, which makes it one of the oldest houses on the island. The blacksmith shop, which is down the road with a working blacksmith in there. His name is Monty. Anybody comes to the island, you got to go meet Monty at the blacksmith shop. He is the coolest guy you'll ever meet. And then you go to the Biddle House next door, and that's the home of our Native American Museum in the Biddle House, which we can tell, kind of look at the 1830s life on Mackinac Island through the lens of Agatha Biddle, who was an Odawa woman who lived in that house in the 1830s, and she was a prominent member of society and within the Odawa tribe, and was just an amazing woman. And so we can tell the story of kind of the Anishinaabeg people of Mackinac Island, that continuing story, using Agatha Biddle as the lens to kind of tell that story. So all of these things included with that Fort Mackinac ticket, and just a way to expand that the history and the story of Mackinac in so many different ways, and which I find just so much fun.
Yes, and then inside Fort Mackinac, there's also the Tea Room.
Oh my goodness, yes, the Tea Room restaurant. It's been operated by Grand Hotel since the 1980s, so we're coming up on 40 years where they've been the official concessionaire in there, and they are a wonderful partner at the Tea Room restaurant. Similar to that view that's behind you on your Zoom screen right now that we were talking about, that's the lunch view that you get from the Tea Room restaurant. So, and in certain tables, you can see not only the Straits of Mackinac and the Round Island Lighthouse and all of downtown Mackinac Island, but you can also see the Mackinac Bridge off in the distance. And maybe if you're lucky, a freighter will come by while you're having you know, your lunch in there. And it's the Grand Hotel food, the Grand Hotel service. So that's all, you know, just such a great part of it. And then the view is just, oh my goodness. And if you're like me, I've been known to enjoy a beverage at 5 p.m., 5:30 p.m. after work. And that's one of my favorite things to do, is go to the Tea Room and have a beer at 5:30, because that's one of the best happy hour views you're going to potentially find anywhere. And that's one of the things that I personally, you know, lunch is great, but having a cocktail at the Tea Room, that's pretty awesome.
Yes. And the one thing I've often wondered, because, you know, they talk about the fur trading and everything like that, what furs were the biggest part of the fur trading?
Oh, it was beaver fur.
Beaver.
Yeah,
okay.
So those top hats you see and stuff, that's beaver
fur.
That's beaver pelt.
So interesting.
Beavers were the big one, and there's others, and I don't know them as well as I probably should, but that was I know that's the main one. That's the one that was the prize. That was the big one.
Very interesting, because I think that when you, I did not realize until I started doing this podcast how big the fur trade was huge part of Mackinac. So, and it just, and until like learning as it goes along with those two waters connecting and how it had to go hand in hand with that, I think that makes something even more valuable to learn about that. You know,
yeah, and you know, the fur trade being the reason that Michilimackinac is constructed, and that's the reason the British are so concerned about moving it more defensible, because they're protecting this interest they have in this area, which is the fur trade. And then so once they get set up in Mackinac Island, Market Street becomes just fur trade central. That's the hub of the Upper Great Lakes fur trade, is right there on Market Street, and millions of dollars worth of furs, which you can, you know, think of that in the 1820s to what millions of dollars would be now, to try to make that comparison. And it's just huge amounts of money. It is so lucrative. I don't quote me on this, but I think like the first self-made millionaire in America was the Astors, you know, was the guy who made his money in New York real estate. But Astor Fur Trade, there's the Astor House here on Mackinac Island. You know, so just insane amounts of money coming through Mackinac Island in the 1820s. And that's what, where Mackinac Island, you know, Fort Mackinac is established there. That's what creates Mackinac Island pretty much as we know it today. But then it's the fur trade that, that hammers it home, that becomes like Mackinac becomes this destination of the place.
Right. Now, when did the fort, I want to say, would you say got decommissioned and was like maybe put part of the Parks Department, and you guys started doing all the reenactments and doing all of this?
Sure. So the roots of that are in the early 1870s. Yellowstone becomes the first national park in 1872. A swell begins to, maybe we can get Mackinac Island named a national park as well. In 1875, that happens, and Mackinac National Park is created. We have the original deed signed by Ulysses S. Grant. It's awesome, you know. So it becomes a national park in 1875. That's the roots of what becomes Mackinac Island State Park today as we know it. It's a national park for about 20 years. It's actually maybe the busiest time for the soldiers. There's a second group of soldiers stationed here, and they kind of serve as park rangers to the fort, or to the park, as well as serving as you know, soldiers. They're cutting out trails and doing all the things that kind of, you know, we associate with how Mackinac Island looks today. However, in 1895, there is no National Park Service, so the Mackinac National Park is being run by the War Department, which manages Fort Mackinac. So the War Department says there is no need for an active military installation in this part of the world. There's no active threat in Canada. Mm-hmm. There's no need to be here. So we're going to abandon this fort. We're going to move the soldiers elsewhere. That's when a decision is made there. So what happens with the national park lands? It's transferred over to the state of Michigan. One of the, just so thankful that they did. So it gets transferred to the state of Michigan, the park lands, the fort, and it becomes Michigan's first state park. In 1895. However, there's no state parks. There's no, like there was no National Park Service. There's no Michigan DNR. There's no state park service here in Michigan. So a board is appointed in 1895 by the governor to oversee this parkland that's here. That's called the Mackinac Island State Park Commission. That is today who still manages Mackinac Island State Park. So that board that was first created in 1895, in 2024, that is still the Mackinac Island State Park Commission that is operating Mackinac Island State Park. So starting then, and the national park had to raise some money as well, but that's when those leases on the east and west bluff are happening in the national park state park time, where you start seeing those beautiful, you know, homes show up on the east and west bluff. That was to earn some money. So we're not, you know, selling tickets to the fort. The park has to start earning some money somehow. And then when the Mackinac Bridge is kind of jumping forward down to the 1950s, the Mackinac Bridge is being built, and it's being funded in a very unique way with revenue bonds. So it's being funded in a unique way with revenue bonds. And so we can look at a couple of different things we can do here. By this point, the commission has, you know, expanded to include Michilimackinac State Park over in Mackinac City, that maybe we can be funded in the same way. So we look at, can we take out revenue bonds as well to fund converting into a full-on museum at this point? And so in the 1950s, we take out our first bonds, and we do a lot of work inside Fort Mackinac and Colonial Michilimackinac, and we're able to open these two sites as museums now, and to protect this vast collection of things that we've acquired over the years and that we continue to acquire. We have millions of things in our collection at this point, and we become a modern museum at that point. So we opened our doors here at Fort Mackinac in 1958, and Michilimackinac, I think, 1960. So, you know, and that's where we shifted in from just being, you know, protecting state parklands to a museum. And we hit, you know, our first museum director, Gene Peterson, and we have just become, you know, a premier museum now in Michigan to be the leading authority in all things history of this area and collection of this area. So we have, you know, our best things are on display, but we have buildings just dedicated to storing this vast collection of things and just protecting it and keeping it alive. You know, to be able to, you know, maybe use in exhibits in the future, but just to have, so people can, if they're interested in researching something, yes, we have that. We can show you this actual piece from whatever year, whatever decade, whatever it is you're looking for, which I find utterly fascinating. And then we've been able to grow since then. And now we're 3 state parks and 9, you know, ticketed historic attractions and all these, you know, we've become this kind of huge entity up there in the Straits. And we continue to grow today, which is really exciting.
Yeah, and with how much, okay, so how much of Mackinac Island is part of the state park?
It is nearly 83% of the island is state parkland. So this isn't the most accurate thing, but pretty much if you're looking at downtown from Fort Mackinac back, pretty much, by and large, is state parkland. And that includes things like Arch Rock and Sugarloaf Rock and British Landing and the airport and, you know, all these kind of, you know, highlight spots within the state park are all part, or within Mackinac Island are all part of the state park back there.
Right. Wow. And then, because when you're riding around M-185, you see a sign that says, well, you're entering.
Yeah.
And then they'll say one that it is leaving it.
Right. So there's some private claims kind of tucked in throughout. So that's why I say it's like not completely accurate, but good chunk of the northern part of the island is within the boundaries of the state park. And then we have little pockets elsewhere, you know, like downtown, you know, like the Biddle House is part of the state park, and, you know, my house downtown, which I can see in the right behind your over your left shoulder there, that's technically within the state park right there. So there's like pockets that kind of show up there.
Is that difficult for people if they want to build within the state park? Is there a lot of stuff that they have to do with that?
Yeah, so I mean, you have to have a leasehold within the state park, and there hasn't been any new ones in a long time. So it's not, you know, I wouldn't say if you have a leasehold on the island, it's not difficult. There is a process that folks have to go through to build, and you know, and there's certain standards and certain things that have to be done. And when you go to sell or transfer leases and stuff, we're going to come inspect the property and things like that. So there are some, you know, some things there, but it's to protect the state park land. That's the main, our main concern is to make sure that the, you know, the land is being taken care of, and it's, you know, it's all, everything's on the up and up pretty much.
Absolutely. And just the beauty of it all. Mm-hmm. Now, can you run through kind of a day of what it is like to go into Fort Mackinac? Because there's always like different things going on at different times. Am I correct?
Absolutely. So we were doing demonstrations just about every half hour in the fort. So if you're arriving in the morning, you know, I'd recommend if you're able to call and see if the cannon firing is available. You got to do that a couple days in advance. So plan that one out. But if you could fire that opening cannon, that is just the absolute best way to start your day at Fort Mackinac and on Mackinac Island. But if you're arriving in the morning, we're most likely going to have a rifle firing demonstration pretty early on. That's on the parade ground, the big grassy area in the middle of the fort. So that's a great way to kind of get that introduction to who the soldiers are, why are they dressed the way that they're dressed, who they are, where decade we're from, what era we're talking about. And then after that demonstration, explore some buildings. I'd recommend right there on the soldiers' barracks, there's a movie on the first floor there. That's going to get you that kind of general overview, kind of see what Fort Mackinac is, what Mackinac State Historic Parks is. And then I would head upstairs in that same building to the second floor of the soldiers' barracks. We have a great overview exhibit called Mackinac, an island famous in these regions. It's based on a letter or somebody wrote to another person saying that Mackinac is famous in this area, and or is a famous island, and it's you know, it's this place to be. And it's an overview exhibit talking about from, you know, the pre-European contact here in this area up to today, which includes movies that were made there. So there's stuff from like Somewhere in Time and This Time for Keeps in that exhibit, and then kind of everything in between there. Talking about the different eras of Mackinac Island's history, especially with Fort Mackinac being the lens that's told through. Then since you're upstairs at that point, then head over, look at the reading room, look at the North Blockhouse, look at the hill quarters, look at those views that you're seeing from right there. So when you walk out the hill quarters, Randall Tell is staring you right down, you know, the path over there, and you look that way, or look, you know, a little bit to the left, and you're looking at Mackinac Bridge. Then you're looking a little left from there, you're looking at the mainland, and then you have the straits. So just another kind of hidden, gorgeous view from up there and that part of the fort. And then at that point, there's most likely a cannon demonstration is going to take place again. So you may have fired it, but now you can see what that looks like from the other side, and you can learn a little bit more about the soldiers and the people that are there, you know, to learn more just about some context of who these people were and why they're doing these things. And that you're going to find out that, you know, they've been doing cannon salutes up there, just like the person who fires that first cannon. They've been doing that pretty much, you know, since the 1800s. That's all the reason they fired that cannon is because they could, because they can salute things, because it's fun to fire a cannon, you know, more often than not. And then, you know, at that point, maybe it's getting close to lunchtime. You've seen a handful of buildings. You've seen some demonstrations. Then you head into the tea room for lunch. Enjoy that view. Enjoy the great food and great drink. And then, obviously, I'm biased. I say head back into the fort, look at some more buildings. But maybe at that point, head downtown, explore the art museum, explore the American Fur Company store, and explore the Biddle House, and kind of get the rest of the context of the history of the island as well. But some other demonstrations, we have some great walking tours talking about the civilians that were working at Fort Mackinac, who the soldiers were, what some of their story is, what women were doing at Fort Mackinac at that point in time. We have programs talking about what happened at night in Fort Mackinac. Just because it's dark out doesn't mean the fort ceased being a fort. There were still duties mm-hmm. and things to do in the evening. What was the equipment the soldiers were carrying? We have a whole program that dives into all that. Medicine at Fort Mackinac, just U.S. Army medicine in general. It was obviously, what they thought was right at the time. Makes me very happy that I live now. Sometimes I wonder how anybody survived in the 1800s. So it's just all these different elements of just who these people were, what life was like. Just so many fascinating subjects that we can touch on in little doses, and then allows you to go into the exhibits to get the fuller context from things that our interpretive staff are showcasing in those tours.
Right, and then so thinking about back with the soldiers and then being up there and stuff. Was there a part up there that they had for their horses?
Say that again, I'm sorry?
Was there a part up there for their horses? Was there stables around there?
There were stables behind the fort. There was a whole pasture near the fort where the Grand Hotel Golf Course is, was a pasture. There was the Marquette Park, was a garden, and they would have had stables down there. So there was multiple areas throughout that would have been for livestock, horses, gardens, all kinds. Yeah, absolutely. So, especially the golf course in Marquette Park, that we think of just being, they're gorgeous areas now, but they were very, there were working spots back when it was an active military installation for sure.
Yes. Okay. So then the other thing that is so interesting up there is how you guys work with scouts and yes. So can you I did have somebody on here. She was part of going up there one summer and she explained what was done. But I think it would be fun because to share with the listener what exactly the scouts and Girl Scouts and what they all do when they're up there.
Sure. So quick background, the scout program on Mackinac Island has been around since 1929. That's when the first group of Eagle Scouts came and served at Fort Mackinac. Part of that very first troop was future President Gerald R. Ford, which is kind mm-hmm. of a cool little piece of trivia. Which I think is one of the reasons why he came back when he was president and he visited. He had that history there. So the scout program has been around since 1929. So we're coming up on 100 years of the scouts. Fort Mackinac, and it is one of the coolest things that we are able to do as an organization is welcome these young people from around the state of Michigan. You have to be from Michigan to be part of the program. And so we welcome these young people from around Michigan to serve serve on the island for a week. So it's Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. Pretty much alternates week to week. That's not always the case, but it's pretty close throughout the week. And it's from Memorial Day to Labor Day. So they're there for 6 days. They check in on, or 7 days. They check in on Saturday. They check out on Saturday. And they work as Governor's Honor Guard while they're here. So they raise and lower the flags at all the buildings, including the Governor's residence. They help out with tours of the Governor's residence on Wednesdays. But they also work as guides at Fort Mackinac, and it's more informational guides at Fort Mackinac. Mm-hmm. So when you wander through the fort, you will see scouts stationed in various locations, very strategically placed to be able to answer questions and assist guests when they're walking through the fort. And then I think and the other things that the scouts do throughout the week that they're there that kind of go unnoticed, but if you're on Mackinac Island, you look at how crazy busy downtown Mackinac Island can be in the summer. but like how beautiful Marquette Park is at that same time, and that there's no trash, and then there's things that's just picked up and it's clean, and that's a big part of the scouts being there and sending patrols down there to clean up that park. And I think that's a huge thing that goes unnoticed, that maybe that they do, whether they're doing these kind of these projects that just help beautify Mackinac Island State Park while they're there as well, including, you know, assisting in Marquette Park. And they'll do little service projects. They'll paint things for us in the park. They'll clean up down trees and branches throughout the park. And just doing so much to help beautify and keep the park running and operational. It's a huge space, and we have a very small staff over there. Dealing with the number of people that are coming over on a day-to-day basis, our staff wouldn't be able to keep up, and those scouts can supplement. And they're so excited to be part of it.
They work tirelessly on doing a bunch of stuff.
And then
they're staying on the island while they're there.
So there's the scout barracks, which are just behind Fort Mackinac, pretty much right behind our office over there. That was constructed as a New Deal program during the Depression. It was part of President Roosevelt's New Deal. That was a CCC project, so the barracks were constructed in the 30s, and so that building's also coming up on being 100 years old, and so they stay there. There's a large sleeping area in the upstairs, and then a common space and kitchen on the downstairs area. And the kids work hard, and they do a lot while they're there, but they also have fun, and it's great to see them out there playing kickball or soccer, or they do little cookouts. They invite the staff over all the time to have lunch with them and stuff. It's such a wonderful program. And hang on, my kids just walked in.
Hang on, guys. You're fine.
It's a wonderful program, and so much fun that we were able to host all these young people from around the state to come serve for a week. And then they're troops from all over the place, and it's kind of like these all-star troops. They work together, the different troops work together to send these kids up there, and it's so cool, and such a wonderful way for the kids to come up and enjoy themselves in Mackinac Island, but also give back in a way that maybe they don't even fully understand how much they're giving back to the park as well while they're there. It's really cool.
I love that. Yes. Well, we're going to wrap up today's episode about this, because I feel like we just, again, skimmed the surface of so much, which now I'm like dying to do even more research about it, because this is so fascinating. And this is not the last time that we're going to hear from Dominic about anything with the park. So I just want to thank you for coming on and starting to share this with the listener, because I really hope it allows them to come on and visit the forts, because I know for a fact, I'm admitting this, I have not gone to Fort Mishra-Mackinac. And so now that is definitely going to be a must, along with me signing up to do the cannon. I'm so excited about.
You can fire the cannon at Mishra-Mackinac too, and you can actually fire all the weapons over here as well. So a little tease for things that we offer over here as well.
Oh my gosh, that is incredible. So I'm going to wrap this one up today, and then we will come back and we will be discussing more about the state park up there, because there is so much still to cover with that. So thank you so much for coming on and starting this series with the listener, for them to enjoy the history.
Oh, Heather, thank you so much for having me. It was a lot of fun chatting with you.
Yes.
If anyone else here thinks that he needs to write a book, I am in complete agreement. His wealth of knowledge just blows my mind, and I could sit and listen to the history forever and ever. I loved it. So we are going to have him on again. Hopefully you're going to get two more episodes before it gets into the full swing of things, and he's going to share some more great information for you about the parks and what you can do, history with them. And I just feel so fortunate that I got the opportunity to meet him. It was all because of Mackenzie, who we had previously had on the show. So it just all worked out great in the end that this has all happened, because I feel so lucky to introduce you guys to him and get this information. So if you've not, like I have not, gone to visit Fort Mishra-Mackinac in Mackinac City, highly encourage you to. And then of course, over on the island, go check out those locations that he talked about, because there's just so much knowledge to be given out when you go to those places. on the website, www.totallymackinawislandpodcast.com. I'm going to have, I always do an episode blog about each episode, information in there, and then you can go in there, read about it, what he talked about. Also down in the show notes, I will have the website for the Mackinac Parks Department for you to go on there. There's so much information on there, you guys. I'm going to look into doing a dedicated area on the website just all about the information from the Mackinac Parks, because I just think it's so fascinating, and I am a huge history person, and I know that I'm only going to be tipping the iceberg of that for sure. So once again, thank you, Dominic, for coming on here and talking with everyone, and I hope you all enjoyed it as much as I did. That concludes this week's episode. I look forward to talking to you next week about our favorite place, Mackinac Island. Totally Mackinac Island is written, produced, and edited by me, Heather.